Hello and a very warm welcome to this podcast, The Sound of Economics, Bruegel's podcast. My name is Guntram Wolf and I'm the director of Bruegel. And today I'm really pleased to host Oleg Kostenko. Oleg Kostenko is the economic advisor to the Ukrainian President Zelensky and joins us actually live from Kiev, where he is currently living and enduring absolutely terrible situation. Now we want to talk, of course, here first from Oleg about how he sees the situation. We want to talk about the economic situation. We want to talk about humanitarian aid, and we also want to talk about sanctions, but we also do want to give space to you, our audience, to ask some questions directly to Kiev, to Oleg, and so you can go on Slido and type the code Ukraine, Slido, and then the code is Ukraine, and you type those questions and I can read them here from my smartphone to Oleg. And we have roughly 45 minutes and want to make this as interactive and useful as possible, and really want to first really express our solidarity and our thanks to you, Oleg, for joining us. I think the world, as you know, looks at what you, the Ukrainian government, the Ukrainian people are achieving and doing at the moment, and is showing a lot of solidarity. And certainly there's a lot of feelings and of solidarity throughout Europe with you. And so I think perhaps we want to first hear from you. Well, tell us about your personal experience, but also how you see the economic situation and the wider situation in Ukraine at the moment. Oleg, thanks.
So basically, the situation is still very difficult. You know, we are still under attacks. Many people are still under the ground, including Kharkov, including Kyiv, including many other cities of the country. The constant bombing from air are coming to our cities. Our people are killed. This night, there were several times when Sumy, which is a city of around, let's say, 300,000 people, they were under bombing, air bombing attack, which is in the eastern part of the country. So many houses are already destroyed. Many people were killed. This night they were killed, something like between 20 to 40 kids, really kids. Yesterday, I don't know whether you heard or not, there was a baby who was killed. Several families, even from, I know from my friends, who were surrounded by Russian militaries. They were trying to get out of there, including one mother with two kids, and they were killed, just killed. There was nobody in the car except the mother, who is like 28, and her very young two kids. So they were killed by Russians. Some of these corridors which were open, they work. Some of them do not work. You know, Russians are always trying to get this propaganda picture for their official TVs. They're trying, you know, to get our people out from the country. And some of the corridors they are proposing are not coming to Ukraine, to continental Ukraine, but to Belarus, and then from Belarus. They are planning to get our people to Russia, which is, you know, our people do not do that. They are staying in their houses. We have a family member who is surrounded now, 15 minutes drive from Kyiv, in their country house. No gas, no electricity, no way to get out of the house. They already have something like six persons in the same country house, small two-floor house, and they in front of them they can see the shop, and this shop was opened immediately after Russians came into this. It's a small, really small village, so Russians were stealing whatever they were able to found there. But basically, they were trying to steal cigarettes, sausages, and beer. That's basically it. So people, the family members are not able to go outside, obviously. the food they had initially. They had some storage of food, but what you can have, you know, in your country house, nuts, you know, a little bit of cheese. So no water they were using, snow, melting snow in order to have, initially they were using it for technical purposes. Now I understand they're drinking this water. So they're boiling this snow and then melting, boiling, and then trying at least to drink this. And without any, you know, possibility to get out of there because Russian troops are already in there. We have a connection with them from time to time, you know, maybe one time in a day. This is a maximum. They're scared, of course, to talk, but they're also scared, you know, to go outside of the city to indicate that they are there. And they have also neighbors in the same situation next door to them. So the situation is really very difficult. We know that, yeah, I don't know whether you heard or not, but there was already a concert in Ukraine in the capital on the main square called Maidan Nezalezhnosti. And on Maidan Nezalezhnosti, we had this concert. And this concert, the main idea was to show the world that we are fighting and everybody in Ukraine fights against this Russian. Rushes, I would say. Again, these rushes, these people, you know, were trying to send a signal to the world that what we really need on the military side, we need, first of all, we need to have a no-fly zone in Ukraine. This is what really is needed for the country, and we do not understand. I think that you already heard what President Zelensky said in his new video to the world, where he says that, look, you guys are responsible for killing our people if you are not helping us with this. We also are hoping that we can have extra supply, including air plants to Ukraine, because we have to fight, we have enough. And we have our people are extremely brave, but we need to have more equipment. So this is on the security side, and we really count on you. And we don't understand why we are not getting that kind of extra assistance, which is really needed for us. And President Zelensky said very clearly that, look, if you would have that kind of problem, we would send our forces immediately to give you a hand to help you, and you are not doing the same. So please keep in mind that if we are falling down, then Europe is going to fall down. So this is important, because when we are talking about, you know, economic issues and you know what people are discussing now, economic costs of one step or another step, please keep in mind that you are guys losing the money, and we are losing our people, we are losing our lives, you know, and we are dealing with a real Orda from the Middle Ages. I don't know whether it's a right word or not in English, but Orda, you know, like Tatarian's Orda. So this is what we see now. Look, if somebody can kill kids, if somebody do not care about handicapped people, and just bombing handicapped people's house. If, you know, we already have hundreds reported stories that our women are raped, you know, women, like young women, like 16, 17, 18, sometimes really old women are raped by Russian soldiers. What we are talking, you know, you're talking about money, we are talking about, you know, lives, you know, possibility to survive. Without extra help, you will not be able to do that. So from this point of view, of course, economic analysis is important, but it's not really the main issue. To understand the damage we already have in our country, that something like $100 billion in assets already lost. These are destroyed roads. These are destroyed bridges, houses, you know, big apartment houses, hospitals, equipment. They were cynical enough, you know, to bomb in Kyiv, even, you know, radiological department for kids with oncology. So all the terrible things. Look, when I see this, you know, even video, these Russians who are who were able to survive and who are were prisoned in Ukraine, you know, despite the fact that somebody from my colleagues are saying, look, when they are talking, they are saying that they did not know, they, you know, did not expect that it might happen. No, in my view, they knew that very much for sure from the very, very beginning. And we already have enough evidence that people who were coming to Ukraine, they knew that they were coming to Ukraine. Yeah, so they did everything on purpose. Moreover, we have evidences that, you know, troops die in Belarus. Belarus is used as a platform to bomb our cities.
Oleg, sorry to interrupt. Perhaps I mean I think this was a really great sort of description of the situation and really the human suffering that we are seeing, and also a clear plea for more military support. Now, we want to focus a bit more on the economics in our live podcast here, also because we are not military specialists, and there's a lot of discussion on the military side that I completely agree with you deserved
me either, but you have to understand.
I understand. So, and I totally agree with you, and I think it there has been an impressive swing in government positions across Western Europe on weapon delivery. But I think you are right that there is, of course, still very open questions, including the question of the military aircraft to be delivered from Poland or not, and you know who's taking that decision. So this is an important discussion, but let's try to focus a bit more on the economics, if you don't mind, because that's, you know, perhaps where we can add the biggest value as economists. And so really, perhaps the one point I want to hear from you is, before we move to the sanctions, which are of course very important, but before we do that, I do want to hear from you. You describe very much the humanitarian dimension of this, and you know the terrible situation for citizens. And I know and I see the numbers. There is a huge willingness across Europe to actually support financially Ukraine. Now, what is your view how we can best help on the humanitarian side at this stage? I mean, it's very difficult to bring in aid, to bring in support, but what can be done? What would be the things that would be most useful for Ukraine if you were telling a Belgian or a German citizen to provide some support? I mean, what could they best do from your point of view?
You know, several points here. The first point is that whatever you can send in terms of the humanitarian assistance should be sent immediately. And we have a coordination center in the government. There is a line. We have a deputy minister for economy who is responsible for that 24/7. So basically he knows all details, he's communicating, and since we have this common center, so they are able to distribute everything to those regions which are in the most need. For now, we need everything, starting from basic things such as you know, food and with everything related to medicine, pharmaceutical industry products. This is what we really need. Some of the hospitals we were able to evacuate even under the bombing attacks. We had an equipment, so we were trying to hit it in different places, but still, this is this is what is needed to be done, and the government center is working on that. And as I said, there is nothing like you have one center here, another one center there. No, it's completely centralized now. Deputy Minister for Economy is responsible for that. If there is a need, I can send you his contact details, and please be in touch with him, and then, you know, they will be happy to receive, you know, any kind of help and any kind of assistance. In terms of what else can be done, and this is not related to sanctions, but somehow everything now, when we are talking about the economic side, is related to sanctions. Look, we feel ourselves when they were running a video on our channels, TV channels, and also in internet. I mean, I feel myself accused when I saw people in Poland who are really, you know, greatest helpers to us now, and who are fighting with us. I mean, the whole world is fighting, but I have to say about our neighbors, you know, people just regular, very middle class Poles were stopping the trucks full of different electronic equipments, full with different, you know, food products, which were loaded in Germany and were moving to Belarus. So they stopped them on the border with Belarus, not allowing them to go into Belarus. But the final destination was Russia. So tell me how we are here in Ukraine. I'm not in Kyiv, but I'm very close to Kyiv. How we can feel ourselves if somebody in Germany is still able to load those cars, you know, to load those trucks just because somebody is trying to make money. If this is incredible, you guys have to understand that there are different dimensions now. There is one dimension, pure economics. Would love to discuss only things related to economics, but we are in a new world. We are in a world of new normality, and this new normality tells me that it's completely impossible and completely unacceptable, not even for me as for Ukrainian, but for everybody who thinks that he is a civilized person in this world to do that kind of things. What should be in the soul or in the head of that German businesses who were, you know, who allowed to load those trucks, knowing that these trucks would be coming to Russia. Tell me, and tell to those people who are currently in Kyiv and in Kharkiv is underground. Tell to those people who were coming to Jewish memorial in Kyiv called Babi Yar, just to put several flowers over there, and who were killed by Russians, the whole family. So we are again in the Second World War. The whole Ukraine for me now is Babi Yar. You know, really, the whole Ukraine. And these Nazis, the new Nazis, these Russians, you know, who are trying to kill our people, are still trying to do businesses with Europeans, and Europeans are still thinking whether we are doing right things or not right things. So this is about economics. So economics for me is not anymore a pure economics. It's political economy now, and it has completely different dimension. But when we are talking about, again, economic situation in Ukraine, we are extremely grateful to all our allies, to EU, to United States, you know, to the whole world who is on our side now, Japan, you know, all these countries which are, you know, very straightforward, you know, not trying, you know, to play under the table games and delivering the messages which are open and clear, and not even delivering messages, but doing the same. You know, we have money thanks to our friends, thanks to our support, thanks to EU. Our reserves are $27.5 billion before the aggression, before the war. We had somewhere around 30 billion. So, look, in 2 weeks, under the open military actions against us, we lost we declined from 30 to 27.5. Exchange rate more or less stable. In terms of the monetary policy, the monetary board of the National Bank decided not to increase interest rate, so we are on the same interest rate as it used to be. In terms of our financial stability, internal financial stability, we are under the current circumstances, we are more or less stable. We are actually continuing to serve our debts. Even under these circumstances, we are serving our debts. We are paying and making all our social payments. Everybody receives payments. Luckily, we were lucky enough because we introduced this in Ukrainian called IDIA, electronic payments, which we are sending, and people have their smartphones, and through these smartphones, they're able to track to receive the money. So from this point of view, it's okay. We are doing this. In terms of assets and the damage, as I said, very roughly, we can say approximately that we already lost $100 billion in our assets. 50% of our businesses are not working currently. Again, our people are not only brave, but also they are, they can understand the momentum, and many businesses were paying in advance taxes. So taxes which were paid, some businesses who were able to do that, they paid until the end of this year. So can you imagine how difficult it is? But they were paying this money. In terms of support, yes, we received money already. We are in the negotiations with IMF. We do believe that we are going very fast on that track, and we will receive the money from them. About 1.2 billion, which was initially dedicated to Ukraine in the form of macroeconomic support, EU macroeconomic support to Ukraine. This also goes in terms of the United States, despite other grants which we're receiving. We received 1 billion initially, even before the aggression, we received so-called U.S. Treasury guarantees. So from this point of view, we are okay. As I said, 50%, when we are talking about real sector, 50% of businesses are not working. The most important things which really should trouble everybody in the world is that our agro sector does not work. For us, it's extremely important sector. It's around 15.15% in our GDP. And for us, this time of the year, so again, also extremely important, because this is a time when we do our land build campaign. Sowing, we have to do it now. And we started usually in the first decade of March, even sometimes first week of March. And then it should be completed until the end of the third decade of April. So not many, time left to finalize that. And please also,
I saw your piece on the agricultural problems.
Right.
It was published in the Financial Times. We have a bit of time to go to some of the questions and talk about the sanctions. And I guess the sanctions is very much keeping our audience up and interested. And so one person in the audience is asking, well, as we speak, Russian gas actually flows to Europe through Ukraine. Has Ukraine thought of shutting the pipeline? If not, why not? And perhaps you can say a few words also more generally on the gas delivery to Europe from Russia, because it's not just going through Ukraine, it's also Nord Stream 1 and other pipelines. And what is your take on what could be done? And of course, the broader context being one of where Russia still exports a lot of oil and makes a lot of money on the oil exports, more than actually on the gas exports, and has the possibility to at least somewhat redirect the oil exports to other powers, including China. So how do you see this whole complex? I mean, this is a very important discussion in Europe, and I think the consensus, in my view, is moving towards banning both oil and gas imports from Russia, which would have really, I think, major consequences for the Russian economy, and would also push Russia towards China and make Russia much more reliant and much more dependent on China, which I don't think is in the end in Russia's interest. So in that sense, it would be really quite a punishment on Russia. But how do you see this whole situation on the gas in Ukraine, through Ukraine, gas in general, and gas and oil, and of course Russia, China?
In terms of sanctions, when yesterday we heard that there were announcements coming from the DC that it's going to be a ban for Russian oil and gas, we just applaud. We think that it's a very good step. Why it's important for us to make sure that Russia is cutting off from international market, both on gas and oil, because these are really bloody money. Whoever is paying for gas or whoever is paying for oil is just paying for killing our people. That's it, period. No other options. Whoever is buying gas and whoever is buying oil is responsible for killings, mass killings of our Ukrainian citizens, civilians, destroyed infrastructure, and all raped women, killed kids. Think about your family members. Think about your kids. Think about what we feel now when you are buying that and when you are discussing when and how you are going to proceed and how long it will take you. So in terms of steps, in my very strong opinion, I have a very strong opinion about that. I think that Russia has to be cut off from that. Otherwise, they will be able to receive till the very last days. They were receiving somewhere around $1 billion daily, $1 billion daily for of bloody money for their gas and for their oil. 700 receipts, 700 million were coming from oil, and 400 million were coming from gas. So one more time, I think that it should be stopped. In terms of how the market is going to react, and we already observed it yesterday, even before it was announced by the President Biden. I know that, and of course, all of us, we heard the speech of President Biden, his latest State of the Union, when he was talking about the main economic goals. He was saying very clearly that inflation is extremely important to him to bring inflation down. So despite that fact, they were able to cut off, their consumers from Russian gas and oil. The same has to be done everywhere. If it's done everywhere, then of course we are going to have different effects in different terms. In a very short run, obviously we are going to see the hike in prices. This is actually what we saw yesterday, even before this announcement. We saw it in United States. Later on, there was a correction, but nevertheless, it happened. Yes, of course, higher prices will definitely mean that it's going to be, a negative effect overall in inflation rate overall in the world. However, I do believe that in midterm, it's going to be a correction on the market. By the way, this discussion, which you guys are holding in Europe in terms of what kind of effect you are going to have if you cut off Russian oil, and yes, you are going to have a negative effect. But according to those economists and experts in this field, for example, in Germany, some of them are arguing, and who are really very respectful. Some of them are arguing that we are talking about either extra 1 percentage point decline in GDP, or maybe 0.5% decline in GDP. So it's not a huge price to pay, you know. So in any case, in the mid run, I do believe that we are going to have different movements, but overall, it's going to be some correction on the market. But then in the long run, or in the longer run, we are going to have only positive effects, both on economic and non-economic side. On the economic side, we are going to push and boost other energy sources of energy, such as green energy, for example. We are going
to. It will accelerate massively. I agree. I mean, it will accelerate massively the shift to renewables. But of course, the renewable shift to renewables will take a number of years. And so the whole worry in Europe now is about, you know, what is going to happen in the next 1 or 2 years. And so perhaps you can still answer.
You can wait, and then you can welcome.
No, but exactly. So I don't think waiting is the right option. I'm just saying this is the worry that many have in Europe. So I do want to ask you. I mean, perhaps you can say a word about still the flow of gas through Ukraine, the Russian flow, and also say answer perhaps here a question by a person called Christoph. He's asking, well, yesterday the EU proposed to reduce Russian gas imports by 2/3 before the end of the year. How will this affect the situation and the Ukrainian resilience? So is a halfway house, so a gradual reduction,
look,
is that actually something that makes sense in the first place, or does it not make sense at all? And my last point again, so on China, if you can say a word on China. I mean, I think those 3 points really deserve a discussion. So gas flows through Ukraine, the EU proposal, is it actually sufficient? I guess I know your answer, but I want to hear it. And the third is China, and to what extent China can actually absorb some of the demand that Europe and the US will not pick up anymore.
In terms of my country, the decision was already made. We are going to cut off from Russian gas at all. We do not believe that they are a reliable supplier. We just do not want to have any businesses with them anymore. We already started a huge campaign with international institutions. Such as Global Witnesses, for example. We are going to track, and we are already starting to track everybody who is buying whatever from Russia in terms of gas and oil. So it's going to be publicly available immediately. We will have people to block the ports. We will have people, you know, such as it happened, you know, in the case of Shell. You know, it's so shame. I felt myself abused when I heard this story from Shell. So in any case, from our side, we are not dealing with Russians anymore. And for us, the answer is completely clear. We will cut off from their gas at every cost which we might have out of that. In terms of oil, I wouldn't be worried too much, because my understanding that it's not that difficult to increase oil production and therefore oil supply to international market. From the Middle East countries, and also, you know, that the White House administration, they are talking about other possibilities to supply oil to international market. In terms of gas, which is discussed like 2/3 now and then a little bit later, no. We don't have time to wait. It should be decided immediately. And Russia should be cut off out of here. Otherwise, as I said, you are going to finance this military campaign and this war against Ukraine. And finally, it's going to be against you guys. So if you would like to try, you, of course, everything in your hands. But I think that it's unfair first. And this is you know, it's even from the humanitarian things, it's just unacceptable. So then do not send us any assistance, you know, humanitarian assistance, because you are going to send humanitarian assistance, you know, while making benefits and or receiving benefits from the, when you are paying to our killers. The world is different now. So it's not like you are in a normal business cycle. It's completely different now. In terms of China, yes, I think that we are, when you are cutting off Russia, and what is really important, Putin was trying to weaponize, you know, gas, oil, and energy against the whole world. He was doing that constantly for, you know, for decades, you know, at least for the last decade. This was the game he was playing. He was trying to use it as a weapon. Now, the same cannon is firing into him, cut him completely, cut Europe from gas and from the oil supply from Russia. That then is going to be completely different logic in Russia. If you don't have 50% of your revenue, of your budget revenue, and this is roughly what they are having from in receipts from oil and gas, so then it's going to be a significant problem for their budget. They would have a deficit for the budget, and still, you know, if you are in the country like Russia, you still have to buy a totalitarian country. You have to buy a sympathy from your citizens. And to buy the sympathy of your citizens, you have to pay money. You have to have the money in your budget, in your pocket. And if you don't have that kind of money, but you already promised that, this is what Putin does. He already promised that he would be increasing. Even yesterday, he was promising that he is going to increase you know, social spendings here, there, those who are with children, those who are in the war, He was calling military, special military operation. This is what, you know, and when you have that kind of deficit, he would probably have only one option. Luckily, we already cut him off from international markets. So luckily, it was done. So the only way how he would be able to fund his fiscal deficit is just printing money. Go ahead. Then we are going. Can you imagine when you have 50%, you know, deficit financed through?
Inflation in Russia is going to be huge. So I'm conscious of the time, and you know, we have a last set of questions, which. Say one word more about China, please.
Yes, Russians will be trying to use China as a possibility, a new platform for them. But Chinese are very smart. When Russia is cut off from international market, they will be probably buying their oil and gas. But the question is only the price. And if it's a half of the price, then it's not the bad things. So basically, this is the way how they can grow. And Russia is going to be weaker and weaker and weaker. And eventually, we are going to see changes in political system of Russia. And eventually, run, we are going to have a more civilized, a more predictable world, meaning that the economy is going toward a global economy.
So this is the last set of questions, and that's exactly where I want to end in the last few minutes that we have, which is really about sort of where does all of this end? And so, one person is asking, well, you know, can you really responsibly push for a no-fly zone, given that it would escalate the conflict into a war between two nuclear powers? Somebody else is asking, you know, and I know these are very big and difficult questions, but somebody else is asking, would it not be better to, you know, approach some of Putin's demands and for example, have Poles in Luhansk and Donetsk and ask for compensation for the Crimea and, you know, find some sort of a political deal? So I guess what these people are asking here, and I want to relay that question, is, you know, we are now in the escalation phase, but where does it end? What does it, how do we come to to some form of an end where things will again be better and normal, and we can talk again about economics and security somewhat separately, and you know our children don't have to suffer the way they do now. So perhaps say a bit about how you see this in the future.
Look, in my view, if there is no fly zone on Ukraine, alternatively, we are not equipped enough to make sure that we are still able to fight with this huge horde, then you would not have any. I mean, if we are weak and if we are falling down, then you guys are next. This is very much sure. So then it's not a question. Then you can discuss, of course, issues related to nuclear or other stuff, but you have to understand that. I strongly recommend you to go to see some, you know, propaganda videos they are running on Russian TV. I watched it yesterday, when just normal, regular people, you know, in different cities of Russia, they are saying that, look, we don't care, we have to bomb Ukraine, and then next we go to Europe. And then there were several, you know, big guys saying that, look, one time we were already in Berlin, we are going to go there one more time. We were in Paris, we will go there. But make sure that this time we will not go back. So we will stay there. And it was applauded by all the rest who were listening to these guys. So for me, it's very clear. Of course, we can discuss many, you know, right things. Even the question you're asking, you seem rational, right? But we are talking about complete irrationality, complete irrational. The world there in Russia, it's a world of complete irrationality. So whatever decision you are taking in terms of, give us no fly zone or not to give us fly zone, you have to think about what would be next. And next, one more time, I'm very much sure are going to be you. And then you can scare it about, confrontation of conflict or not scare it about confrontation of conflict. But then it's only the question of time. And the time is, the clock is ticking very, you know, very fast. So from this point of view, it's already, this is how I see the way. I don't remember the last question. Could you remind me?
No, it was really, I mean, about, in a sense, the end game. And, you know, one person was asking in the audience, Luhansk and Donetsk.
This is a political side. As you probably mentioned already, President Zelensky several times, including, I guess, yesterday, he was saying that, look, I am prepared to sit in around the table and to discuss all the issues. This is exactly what President Zelensky was saying. So it's a matter of negotiation. We would like to be prepared. Our leader, our president, is prepared to be to be in this table to discuss, to sit there and to discuss all the issues, including Luhansk, including Donetsk, including everything. But it's more on political side, and I'm not really allowed to comment on that stuff.
Okay, this was thank you so much, Oleg. This was really wonderful, and thank you so much for taking time in these very difficult circumstances for, you know, very clear messages. I'm sure a lot of people have listened, and a lot of people have taken note of what you said, and this is very important. And I hope it can, you know, be of some support to Ukraine, to your people, and of course, in the end, also to world peace. So let's all hope that this was a good session, and that this will not end in a complete catastrophe like a world war. But anyway, this is a big discussion, and I really appreciate that you took the time today to discuss with you, Oleg Ustenko, economic advisor to Ukrainian President Zelensky.
Many thanks for giving me this opportunity to talk to you guys. To share with you our feelings, to describe you the situation in the country. And one more time, for many thanks for standing with us, with Ukraine. It's really, you know, it's for us, it's a great patriotic war. We are trying to survive, and somebody is not giving us a chance to survive. So I do
thank
hope
you so
that
much.
Economics is going to be really the second issue. You know, first of all, the peace. We really need peace.
Thank you so much, Oleg. And, you know, our thoughts are certainly with you and also our solidarity. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.